Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello, Egg Chasers. Welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We love rugby. Actually, can we just hold up? JB's here already.
Hello, Timothy.
Can we just hold off a minute? Phil's just... Look at him humbly clearing snow out of the rugby dungeon, making sure we can record.
Well, I mean, it's amazing that he brought snow with him to put in the dungeon to clear.
So humble, Phil.
Always humble, mate. Always clearing snow and sweeping up the change rooms with my brush the wrong way round.
And getting your missus to post it on Instagram.
And putting tape in the bin and everything.
So humble.
Exactly.
Right, this weekend we're going to get into some domestic rugby, looking ahead to the Six Nations, talking about the fact that it's been a heartening weekend, not just for the humble antics of rugby players, coaches and things like that, sweeping snow, using your 4x4 car as a makeshift ambulance in South Wales.
Amazing.
As JD was. It's also been heartening for Quins fans. They know there's someone even worse than them now, categorically, after today.
We watched this game. It was grim. Was it grim? We'll come back to it.
It wasn't great.
Some teams are on a downward trajectory, some on an up. We'll be taking a look over that. It's also getting quite excited. It's this time next week, we will be...
Relieved.
Yes, having completed a live podcast in Madrid with a crowd of... however many people at various stages of inebriation.
If you make it to the final podcast, I mean, we've got 250 travellers, 250 tourists, that if we get 250 to last from
still
Friday,
standing, yeah.
Saturday, and then finally get there on Sunday, fair play, boys, fair play.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it very, very much. And Spain are on the verge of history.
Tell you what, now,
as well.
So that's the cool part. So if Spain qualify, presumably somewhere, there is going to be a party which we need to attend.
They won't qualify officially next week.
Will they not?
Not unless Romania lose and Spain win with a bonus point.
And Romania are playing?
Romania are playing, Phil.
Give me 2 seconds. I'm just trying.
Come on, Phil. No, we demand stats on demand with
Belgium
you.
Belgium or Russia?
They played Russia this weekend.
So it's
2018
Belgium,
championship.
I'd say.
Romania are playing Belgium.
Yep, who had a handy win over Germany, who shattered themselves from last year, which is a shame.
Yeah, anyway. Which is interesting. The German, we've received a couple of good messages on this from a chap called Dennis Frank, who knows his German rugby, and it's all to do with Hans Wild, who sounds like a porn star.
He is.
But he's actually an eccentric former lawyer, billionaire.
Yeah, now he's the owner of Orangina, is he not?
No, Capri-Sun.
Oh, that's the same thing, isn't it?
Orangina's Toulon.
So, yeah.
Yes, you're right, it is.
I believe he's also the owner of Stade Francais.
He is, that is correct.
Wow.
And he's got his fingers in multiple pies. But
then you've got Hans Wild.
Exactly.
Has anyone ever seen the film Foxcatcher?
I've not seen it yet.
Yeah.
Watch it. And then imagine rugby and then imagine my future house.
But Hans Wild is basically... From what I can tell from Dennis's messages and from the bits I can piece together online, he seems to be basically holding the German Rugby Federation to ransom by refusing to release his players without a €2,000 per player per game bonus to him.
So, okay, I think there's more to this than meets the eye. And I don't know the details, but the reason I think there's more to it than meets the eye is... if you're an eccentric billionaire who has invested, God knows, I mean, have you seen the Germany Training Centre?
I've not, no.
It's amazing. Well, it's not amazing, it's very, very good, right? And it's one of those success stories which is slowly building. So I don't think you invest in German rugby for the profit motive.
No. Well, the,
but also,
the
you don't make billions unless you are aware of turning a profit and such, and investment and...
I mean, I just think, like, you know, if I don't understand if it's Stad, I don't understand, you know, but even, like, Bujala, yeah, he'd love to make a profit. It doesn't strike me as it his that is his main goal at Toulon. Same with Bruce Craig.
Yeah, it's interesting because... So, I've referenced this on the podcast a few times, but I read a brilliant book a couple of years ago called Soconomics.
Yeah.
And that talks, obviously, it's about football, but very few football clubs ever make a profit, despite the fact that it's generally billionaires or certainly multi-millionaires taking over them. And they seem to partly be able to run them as a loss because people are always interested in doing business outside of football,
yes,
with the person who owns a football club.
I can completely see that.
So it actually, it's a boost on other businesses, even while the football club as a standalone doesn't necessarily boost it.
Right, looking at what we've seen this weekend, and I'm wondering if it links with the whole turning a profit thing. I wonder if money was the motivator in London Irish letting Blair Cowan go to Saracens. He's joined on loan till the end of the season. I think some people have looked at this and thought, well, that's London Irish throwing the towel in. Certainly didn't seem like that from their performance against Wasps today.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about this. How much has Blair Cowan been playing? Because when I heard this, I thought, this is terrible. And I mentioned this to you, didn't I, Phil? And you're like, yeah, well, then he's not been playing, so...
He's been on the bench, or...
What's the big whoop?
Yeah.
So, well, I'd say the big whoop is he's... I would imagine, I don't know, but I'm just guessing there's something going on behind the scenes because him not playing doesn't add up to me. He's one of, if not their
best
player.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. But if he's not been picked anyway, I mean, I don't know, are Irish getting a fee for him? I assume so.
Well, they're not paying his wages.
Yeah.
And Connor Gilsonen, you know, promising youngster, but he's not Blair Cowan, was there seven today. So it's a really odd one. I can understand why London Irish fans are disappointed. I can understand why Saracens fans are quite pleased, because with all the players that they're missing, they've got someone of experience there.
Yeah, and when me and Jay were talking about it the other day, he's experienced fitting into multiple different systems. He's played in New Zealand, he's played for Scotland many times, and he's obviously experienced in the Premiership. And he's experienced fitting into different systems, which is key for Saracens.
It is.
And that'd be a good signing, actually. I think a bit of a change of scenery as well.
Yeah.
Going to from the worst club to one of the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. He might be a great signing, actually.
Yeah, it could be.
Could be. Another story this week that everyone seems to be talking about quite a lot is this George North situation. Yeah. We can get into the specifics of the games in a little bit, but just on the George North situation. So after the game, Alan Gaffney was asked by a reporter at BBC Northampton, so where was George North today?
Can I just say, BBC Northampton get some great little sound bites. They had a good one from Tom Wood not so long ago.
Yeah, I think there are the old traditional clubs like Gloucester, like Leicester, like Northampton have great relationships with their local radio station and they do a lot of stuff.
Well, I can say that our local club does not have a good relationship with the BBC. Well, the BBC just don't care.
No, of course. They, and why would you when...
You've got United and City.
And, yeah, you know, you could... it would take... In fact, in the whole season... How many games would it take at the AJ Bell to get the attendance of one Manchester United game?
That's a good question.
15?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a whole season's worth of home games. A whole season's worth of home games for one Manchester United game.
Not only that, if you don't think Sale are up against it, think about the local paper, the MEN, make an absolute fortune from the football, rightly so, because people all around the world tune into their United and City coverage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think they had two reads of them. A sale.
So George North, how do we read this? So Alan Gaffney. So let me get the exact quote here. Where is George North today? Alan Gaffney said, "I'm disappointed he wasn't there." He said,
So I've got the quote here.
Oh, thank you, Phil.
So this is Gaffney's direct quote. It's a pretty good question. So this is when asked why Sale wasn't North wasn't involved against Sale. So it's a pretty good question, and it's a very difficult one to answer at this moment in time. You'd probably have to ask George. We picked a side that actually wanted to be out on the pitch and the best side for Northampton. I haven't spoken to George personally about it, but I'm just disappointed he wasn't here.
Right, I'm a little bit confused, because what this has done is George North copped a load of flack off the back of this. He got no commitment. Where's his? What's your thoughts firstly?
So he wasn't picked in the side.
Nope.
And presumably he's in Wales.
Well,
or he's been in Wales
allegedly, and this is a big allegedly, a huge allegedly. But allegedly, he's been talking to Wayne Pivac this weekend and been in Llanelli. Huge allegedly.
I was going to say, where's that from?
Secret source, mate.
Right.
It is. It's disappointing that it's his club playing at home in what is an important game for them, because they've not had many good results recently, and this was an opportunity for them to get one. So he should really have been there.
Yeah.
Should he?
Well, that's it. That is exactly right, Tim.
I would say, so from what Alan Gaffney's saying, he expects the players who aren't in the matchday squad to be there.
Do you think Alan Gaffney understands international release windows?
I would be amazed if he doesn't. I mean, he's been around the block a bit.
But he hasn't been in Northampton very long. He wasn't here in the autumn.
So there is some confusion on this, because when George North played for Wales, I think it was against Australia, pre-World Cup. Remember, they had like a seeding game, didn't they? And
outside of an international window.
That's right, yeah. And he played, and everyone kicked off, and then Northampton were fined, I think, £90,000.
Well, Quinns were fined for Jamie Roberts.
Yeah, similar sort of thing.
And didn't that happen again?
Yeah, so my understanding about the Northampton one was, this was the first one, it was like a test case, and that fine that they paid covered
Talupe Faletau, he
all his future windows.
Well, Bath got fined because of him. So I think the deal is, Premiership Rugby say you're not allowed to have a clause in your contract saying that you are unavailable for your club in off weeks during international windows.
Yep.
And unless you're with England, and then you're allowed. And it's Eddie Jones' discretion.
Yeah.
But you're not allowed to with other unions. I think that's the situation.
It seems a bit naff, that, doesn't it?
Well, you can understand it. Well, Premiership Rugby are there to help Aviva Premiership clubs.
Yep.
And have a relationship with the English RFU.
Why not all? I mean, if you're the English Premiership and you want the best players, let's just forget the England part, because I understand.
Well, no, because the England part's absolutely intrinsically linked.
Yes, it is.
Because
right?
The academies are all part of that. It's all about the England team and about the Premiership clubs.
Yeah, okay, so I get that. But there's like a positive and negative here. So the positive that England and the Premiership have is England gets to play their players in the Premiership, Premiership get world-class players, so on and so forth. It doesn't strike me as a good business model to then go and upset all the other unions or make it not advantageous for players to play in your competition.
There's a financial compensation for players that aren't available to clubs from the English RFU, and there isn't that relationship with the Welsh RFU, for example. So the facts are, playing at an English club, and the situation is written down, it's in ink, and there's been legal cases, You cannot have a contract that means you're exempt from games. Talupe Faletau has one. Bath swallowed the fine. George North has one. Northampton swallow the fine. Yep. So then why are Northampton now complaining when during an international window he's not available? Well, because, and also, what's going on here? It's like, it's not, I don't think this is George North's call, is it? Isn't it Warren Gatland's call?
Well, it's very...
I assume it is.
You've done a wonderful job of muddying the waters in a way that actually reflects the situation. There is another side to this, of course. I do think George North also does not want to be there.
That may well be the case.
Yeah.
I mean, I
doubt that.
At the start of the season, he was completely disinterested. He actually, here's a little anecdote for you. He went to play against Sale in the A-team league not so long ago, like the second game of the season, and the description of, you know, what was it like? Because I think it's him and there's two other lads who are usual first teamers. Do you know when the slides first started happening?
Yeah.
Completely disinterested, did not want to be there.
Really?
Yeah, and I think that has kind of continued. Until recently, he looked a bit more interested. But, you know, I wonder with George North, you look at some players, like, let's think of a small lad, like a George Ford, right?
Yeah.
George Ford must love rugby. Because if you don't love rugby and you're 6 foot, and you're 5 foot ten or whatever it is,
and 13 stone,
it's a hard game to play. And I wonder if like George North is such a physical specimen. He's always been expected to play, but never actually enjoys it quite that much because he doesn't seem like the sort of guy who relishes rugby.
I hear exactly what you're saying, JB. I've one thing to add from my perspective to this, which is, do you think Alan Gaffney would have even mentioned it or entertained the question or answered it in the way he did had Northampton not had an absolutely abject first half that caused a defeat with a performance that their supporters do not deserve at home?
Well,
what I'm saying is it. Mark McCall, Rob Baxter, Dean Richards. I'm trying to think of other directors of rugby off the top of my head. Would not have answered that question. They would have said, "We put a team out and that was the team we selected, and we're disappointed in the performance." Throwing the spotlight onto George North, I thought, was, regardless of what you think of George North's commitment, I thought it was a really rubbish move. Personally.
Yeah, because George North isn't going to stop Dennis Solomona. I completely agree.
I think that's probably the most surprising bit out of all of this. Whether George North should or shouldn't have been there contractually or otherwise.
Or what Warren Gatland's thoughts on the situation are. Yeah.
Taking all that out of the... Take it all that away, Alan Gaffney basically threw in one of his most high-profile players, if not his most high-profile player, under the bus, is probably the most surprising and probably the worst thing about this whole incident.
Do that if your team plays really well. Say you could make it. If Northampton had played brilliantly and won, say, you know what, we won. I was thinking about selecting George North, but he wasn't interested. But I'm really proud in what the boys did. It's the wrong way around to do it. I know it's still throwing him under the bus, but what I'm saying is doing it off the back of a bad defeat, I don't like it.
It's really bad.
Also, Gaffney's only there for 6 months, isn't he? So he's got to get
until
results.
Chris Boyd comes in.
Pretty much instantly. Mm. And I'm thinking, was it that wrong? Well, if there's a culture in the club that the lads don't care and they're not trying hard enough, maybe you do make an example of your highest paid player, especially if you're never going to use him ever again and he's not interested anyway. Well, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just kind of thinking of all sides of it. Can I just add one more thing to the George North saga, which is not related to this? I would not be surprised if George North has one of the largest pay cuts in modern rugby history when he finally signs his new deal.
So, I'm just looking. He signed for Northampton in 2013.
320, I'm guessing.
Well, I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But that was immediately post Lions.
Wow.
So his stock could never have been higher.
Yeah.
And his stock has only fallen since then, in my mind.
And in reality, that probably means money will stay relatively flat.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Maybe he moves for... can you imagine any of the Welsh regions paying that amount? I know he's got the dual contract. And what does a dual contract pay? Is it 60 or 40%? I can't even remember.
I don't know.
But, it's a large amount. But which of the regions can, shell out that sort of cash?
Yeah. And the other thing is, they can only... My understanding is the WRU will make what they deem to be a market offer.
Love it.
So they should really wait, speak to Northampton to make an offer, if anyone does, and then just match that.
Yeah.
That is then a market offer.
He feels like a Worcester player at the moment. Big name, declining. Or maybe Bath, something like that. I understand he's signed the dual contract, but not the club contract.
Okay.
So he's going to be shopping around, unless Dragons come up with a big offer for him.
Can I say the player that... Because George North, you can talk about commitment or not, the player that I'm really, really disappointed in this weekend, again, and I have been disappointed for the past few weekends, Greg Bateman. It should be outlawed that props can shift in the way he can shift. Especially, he did it again today, another wonder try from a prop.
Especially looking the way he does.
Yeah.
He looks like a traditional... solid roly-poly prop, but he's got some explosive
and
pace.
I tell you what, he's worth a lot of money as well.
Yeah.
Because he plays across the front row.
Yeah.
So he's got I don't know if this is official now, the 60% of all, what was it? 60% bump from cross-positional playing.
Oh. I just think we've said it before, and it should be the mantra for props. That's the more Max Lahiff. Max Lahiff is that... Props should be in shape, and that shape should be round. Greg Bateman actually is round. He's solid as hell, but he's just... His skill set is unreal.
He's brilliant. Yeah. He was exceptional.
So, yeah, he was exceptional, and I'm very disappointed about it. Front row should not behave like this.
Correct.
You'll be pleased that Max Lahiff, who you just mentioned, was on for less than 30 seconds.
He was?
Before getting yellow carded. For just looking too good.
Good. Glad
to hear. Justice.
Yeah. Speaking of refereeing decisions and such, it was an interesting refereeing decision of Nigel Owens to go on television doing an impression of Nick Knowles.
Not seen it. So I have heard descriptions of it.
This whole thing has passed me by. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, so after the England-Scotland game, I don't know whether Nick Knowles had been drinking, but he went on a massive rant at Nigel Owens last week.
Sorry, before we continue, there is something going on with Nick Knowles because he frequently stars or is named, I think, by Tom Shanklin. Frequently. Is there some sort of ongoing banter about Nick Knowles and his album?
Because well, yeah, he has one of the worst albums of all time. If that's,
I've not released mine yet.
That's well, you'll be in esteemed company. So Nick Knowles released an album for some reason. He's a big rugby fan. I think he's a Quins fan. I don't know, or Bath. I don't know, one of the two.
Born in London.
I think so, it might be Quins. Yeah. And, yeah, he was tweeting about the calling Nigel Owens a cheat and or how he's... His decisions were clearly just trying to get even after the England-Wales game.
I hate that.
Nigel Owens responded. They had a bit of back and forth. Nick Knowles was ridiculously replying to Welsh fans. It just in ridiculous fashion. Yeah. And then Nigel Owens went on television doing a send-up sketch on S4C of Nick Knowles.
S4C?
Looking like Bob the Builder. Was it S4C or...
S. Pedroach.
Or maybe not S4C, maybe it was Scrum 5. I don't know. On some show, he did a sketch as Nick Knowles. And I don't know.
A hilarious sketch, no doubt, watched by five people.
And I've got a lot of time for him. I'm not sure I want to see international referees doing sketches on TV.
Sketches where he's kind of getting back for someone who he's had beef with.
Yeah, about his refereeing decisions. Yeah.
That doesn't feel right.
Yeah, if you want to do a funny sketch, do a funny sketch about Eddie Butler, because that would actually be funny. Like, do something about the comments. Obviously, you can't do anything about the games, because that makes you look like...
Yeah,
you know,
you can't be biased.
But actually,
or anything
he could
like
do
that.
Something rather funny about, you know, Brian Moore. I mean, there's tons of comedy gold related to Brian Moore. Nick Knowles, who knows about Nick Knowles?
Here's Nigel Owens. Like, I don't know, you take his This Isn't Soccer line, and you get him, I don't know... people fighting outside a bar. Nigel Owens comes in. This isn't soccer.
Exactly.
I don't know. That was a really rubbish example.
Well, no.
You can imagine it on the Fast Show or something.
It isn't a rubbish example. And do you know why? Because maybe if Nigel Owens was around Manchester Oxford Road the other day, that line might have
yes!
worked nicely.
It's almost like we planned that segue.
Good segue.
Yeah, Oxford Road Station. I don't know why Eddie Jones was getting off at Manchester Oxford Road Station.
I know.
Why?
Because the Edinburgh line... Oh, no, I don't know.
No, because it stops at Oxford Road and then it stops at Piccadilly. So yeah. I think he just...
Was it stopping at Piccadilly and Oxford Road?
I think he got off at the wrong one.
No, because the United car...
He had a car waiting for him there.
Yeah.
Presumably, well...
He called his car and said, I've got off at the wrong one, come here. And that's why he had to wait a couple of minutes, because the car clearly wasn't waiting for him.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it was.
I tell you what, some of the worst scenes I've ever seen from... Well, basically from any situation ever. I mean, it was a humanitarian disaster what happened to him. the outrage about this was spectacularly outrageous.
So, yeah, I'm sure you've seen the video. If you haven't already, it was a few beard up Scots who were just giving him a bit of stick. They did, when he was in the car, they did call him an unsavoury word, which I won't repeat.
Yeah, they did, you know, so... My view on this is, it isn't great, right? But there's loads of different... I'm not in any way defending it, and this is a horrible society that we live in that I have to say, well, I'm not defending drunken yobs. I'm not defending drunken yobs, right? But different things, different circumstances are effectively different. So, you know, if I saw... I'll give you an example, David Flatman, and gave him a rather stern slap on the back and said, hi, David, how are you? That's very different to going up to the back of an 80-year-old pensioner walking down some stairs, giving him the same force of slap on the back and watching him tumble down. This guy is an England rugby coach. And if I'm a hammered Scot on a train, I might be forgiven for thinking he can take a bit of banter. But he looked like an intimidated octogenarian and shuffled into a car like he's a US president. It was bizarre, absolutely bizarre. I can't help thinking that if you handled it a bit differently, that would not have occurred.
Well, the thing that I was disappointing was this was clearly an effort on Eddie Jones's part to be quite affable and...
Do you think?
And, well, yeah, because he travelled in standard class, he said.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't deserve a medal for that.
No, I'm not saying you deserve a medal, but that must have been a conscious choice because a weekend upgrade's only 20 quid.
Yeah, and also on those Edinburgh trains, they are the that it isn't worth the first class.
No, you just get that little box, don't you? You just get that little box.
It's just not. It's just
but you do weird. Avoid a load of drunken.
Now, can I just say
rugby fans?
Can I just say this bit? Apparently, so my little synopsis of what happened there is a little bit unfair because we only see the station bit. Apparently, it did start before in the train.
On the train.
About that bit, I can't possibly comment. But if it's just that one little bit, I'll go, you know, get on with it.
Yeah. So I mentioned he travelled standard class. I think that was clearly an effort to. And the fact he stood, and even if he had been getting some stick on the train, and then he still stood and took photos outside, I think it was an effort to be. And you see the way he was very magnanimous after the game.
Yeah,
I think it might have been a conscious choice. I'm not going to be a dick, and I'm going to pose for pictures. I'm going to travel standard class. I'm going to take a bit of banter, and I'm going to rise above after we've lost. I think that might have been what was going on, and it's a shame that it ended the way it did.
It's interesting that you say it like that because I see him as being very, very cold. And I was thinking like other people in rugby who I've met. And, you know, rugby in general is a game of big characters. And the England rugby coach, particularly with his persona, you'd almost expect him to say, oh, hi guys, how are you? What are your names? Sorry, I've got to rush. My taxi's here. But he just looks intimidated. And that's the weird thing about the whole thing.
Because it went on the train.
Yeah, and if
don't
it's the
know
train,
what's happened. Yeah. I mean, me and you were on that train to Glasgow.
Oh my God.
A few weeks ago with a very intoxicated Glaswegian chap singing both Celtic and Rangers songs.
Yeah, yeah.
And talking about injecting drugs into himself.
Yes.
Where on himself?
And his parents' genitalia.
Yeah.
And I must say...
Sorry, injecting drugs into his parents' genitalia or talking about his parents' genitalia?
Yeah. Talking about injecting drugs into his own genitalia, but talking about his parents' genitalia. I'll be honest, if I wasn't...
they were the sober ones, Tim.
Well, if I wasn't with you on that train, if I was on my own, and if I was a 55-year-old man like Eddie Jones, I would have been pretty intimidated in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it isn't good. It shouldn't have happened.
Just like a social experiment. Did either of you or did anyone say to him, hey, come on, fella, settle down?
I'll tell you what nearly happened. He nearly got kicked off the train.
He did, or you did?
No, he did. He nearly got kicked off the train twice, to which I would have... At that point, I would have actually stood up for him and said, come on, he's only shouting. I mean, the consequences of leaving a drunk man on a station in the minus conditions when all he's doing is shouting seems to be not really worth kicking off a train for.
Yeah, he was never actually threatening anyone. He was just a bit annoying.
He certainly didn't call anyone a baldy, whatever it was. And the last weird thing on this was apparently it continued on a different train down to down to London.
Did it?
Well, see, if he was getting on a train down to London, he definitely got off at the wrong station.
Yeah.
And he had to call a car to get him a quarter of a mile across Manchester.
Oxford Road to United, and then the next day...
Because he went to see Alex Ferguson, didn't he?
Yeah, Piccadilly to...
Getting off at Oxford
Road. Yeah, and apparently it continued, so I guess those lads were following him. I don't know.
Well, at least he met a nice Scot in Alex Ferguson. In his time in Manchester.
Oh, by the way, if you want to see a man who deals with a lot of abuse a lot of times from a lot of people, Alex Ferguson, probably have a chat to him.
Yeah, he's probably a good man. But then I can't imagine Alex Ferguson going on, not only standard class, going on a train. So he would have taken a helicopter or private jet.
Well, I was once on a train from Manchester to London and sat opposite Ian Dowie, and only the last like half hour we struck up conversation. I pretended not to know who he was, but it's hard not to know who Ian Dowie is.
Yeah,
and then same with Mark Hughes.
I've once had I can vouch that Alex Ferguson travels by helicopter because I've once had to stop playing golf so he could land on the 17th green in a helicopter. So I was playing. I managed to blag me and a mate around at Mere Golf Club, which Steve Diamond's house backs onto.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Steve Diamond because I was about to go there next. correct.
And we, someone just came out and said, sorry, you're going to have to stop there. You can't take it. I was going to take a nice little chip approach onto the 17th green. They went, what? You got, no, you can't play. Sorry.
We've
got a visitor. And then you just heard this helicopter come down. Fergie walked out straight to the bar where there was a bottle of red waiting for him.
So I'm not sure if that's Fergie's helicopter, but they do travel in the helicopters quite a lot. And you know whose helicopter it usually is? As I understand it, is Jed Mason, who owns a helicopter.
Is he a racehorse
guy? No, he's the owner of Sale.
Oh, right.
So there's Jed and there's Simon Orange. Mm. And when they... So Sale have got their own, like, their own little plane now, and it's got Sale Sharks on the fin. And I don't know how often they use it, but that's also Jed's plane that goes from each of his locations.
That's ridiculous.
Well...
Sale Sharks have a plane.
Yeah, yeah.
They've just got a road to their ground.
Diamond's got to get in somehow.
They've had a plane for years.
They're ordering their transport wrong, aren't they? Prioritise the plane.
It's trickle down, mate.
Before we get into any other specific games, the only other thing, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but the first of the New Zealand link-ups with Avicii sides is with Harlequins.
Yeah.
This will be a link-up which will see New Zealand players on sabbaticals.
I don't really understand it, is the answer. I mean...
Well, from a New Zealand perspective, you understand. It's a way to keep players involved in the national setup, but also let them earn the money that they want to go and earn, to stop Lima Sopawanga, for example, leaving and not being available for New Zealand.
Yeah.
Because New Zealand doesn't have enough money in it to keep them.
No, but neither do Harlequins. I mean, that's the other point I'd make. So... I think what it does very smartly is it takes almost like the moral high ground off the table for rugby players. What I mean by that is very few rugby players stand there and go, I'm going for 600k a year and I can't wait. Right? They don't say that. They go, I want to go and experience a new culture. So you take the culture card off the table. You say, hey, you can go to London at probably a little bit below market price, but you can go there and you can still be an All Black. Do you fancy it? And then all of a sudden they've got nowhere to turn. They can't say, well... I kind of wanted the 600k.
I really, really fancied going and looking at the Bristol Ship Museum and learning about the old slave trade in Bristol.
Exactly. I love all
I'm going to go there. Just so happens I'm getting 700 grand.
Exactly. And I think that's, it sort of does that for him, doesn't it? It takes that card off the table. How does it work for Quinzo? I mean, what if they've got Bowden Barrett who wants to go for a sabbatical? Sure, they'll take him. But that's not great for Marcus Smith and Dimitri Katrakalis and James Lang.
They played Bowden Barrett at 15.
Yeah, I guess so. Won't be able to get Marcus Smith out.
Exactly.
Equally, if they wanted to send Marcus Smith out, go and get some experience in New Zealand, that could be great for England. We haven't even thought about the potential flip side.
So I assume...
Go play with the beloved Canes. Phil's beloved Canes.
He'd be nowhere near the team.
Well, I'm kind of thinking a couple of things. Like, if they have three All Blacks come over, right? So that sounds like a reasonable number that might want to sabbatical. They can't all go to Quins. I mean, how much would that be against the cap? So you can have one marquee player.
Two marquee players.
Well, yeah, providing
you've not got one existing.
Yep. So, that's going to cost you a lot of money. And then you've got to add someone else to your cap.
But I think we said it a couple of weeks ago, and I think you just touched on it then. It won't necessarily be a marquee player. It will be a four-month deal. Right, you want to go and experience something, because I think that's a big part of it. Like James Haskell, when he went to play Super Rugby, earned, 30 grand or something?
Yeah.
It wasn't about the money for him. He wanted to go. So I think that's a big part of it. The opportunity to travel to the other side of the world, live in London, play a different type of rugby.
You want to live in London?
Earn a bit of cash.
Would you like to live in London for below market value? No, thank you.
No, but, you know...
Send me to Carlisle.
They'll come over. They'll be... I'm sure, you know... Probably one of the things they'll do is Worcester Warriors will end up getting one because you'll say to the boys, got really super fast Wi-Fi in one of the Worcester houses.
Relaxation rooms.
It's fine, but I don't know what you can do with a fly half in 4 months, is what I'd say.
Well, maybe it's a season. Who knows the way it's going to work.
But some of the kind of short-term loan deals that have worked this year, like Nazim Carr and...
Absolutely.
Rohan Jansi van Rensburg.
The fly off from Worcester is going to be coming back.
John O'Lance.
Yeah, they liked him and he's coming back.
And also, what's his name? The scrum off they've got is pretty much just a part-time player.
Oh, Huhard.
You don't see him, do you?
Hoo-ha!
To party through the season and he plays. Yeah, so could work, actually.
Yeah, it's not a bad option. And I think my biggest concern is just like we spoke about this the other week, but just like when Sam Burgess was going to be paid by England and go to Bath, what the other Avicii Premiership clubs are going to cause a fuss here?
There is a thought as well that it's something to do with Adidas.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, well, I've actually phoned Adidas to find out, and they deny it.
Yeah.
They say they've not... I've contacted someone at Adidas, and they've said, well, we put them in touch, which is why they put them... That's why they played the A-team a while ago, but they deny categorically that they brokered this deal.
They won't have brokered that deal. It could be to do with Nick Evans, who's there.
Who's in New Zealand at the moment.
Is he?
Yeah, he's gone back to learn.
Oh. Well, there you go.
That makes more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I like it in principle. And just, if I was Leicester, if I was Bath,
yeah,
I'd be saying, hang on, if they're getting access to players that we simply don't have access to, then there is an issue.
Well, they do have access to them if they negotiate a deal. It's up to New Zealand Rugby to decide who they do deals with.
Well,
this.
As long as it's sort of transparent in terms of what do we need,
what
is the standard of coaching, or what is the, how many coaches do, I mean, obviously Quinns could actually give them their own full time coach. They've got so many coaches.
Yeah, but that's like saying Leicester happens to be on a patch where you've got the next headquarters, JCB headquarters, and they happen to have good commercial sponsorship deals with Leicester. It's like, well, you know, Worcester are going, hold on, we've only got the electric or boiler company here. That's not fair. I don't buy that. As long as it's within salary cap, do what you want.
Well, yes, I get that, but I think the point the New Zealanders were making, it needs to be almost like a licensing system where you have to have a certain standard of facilities and coaching and medical staff for them to send over their people.
It didn't really sound like that when they spoke about it in the press release.
Oh, that's how I read
surrounding it.
Yeah, I've not read that, but that is my assumption from the initial kind of murmurings around this.
Is New Zealand so far in advance that Harlequins would, or any Premiership side would be a million miles away medically? Surely not.
No, I don't think it is. But no. I just think New Zealand want to kind of rubber stamp to confirm, because they've had players go to, for example, France in the past and come back.
Yeah, like Toulon.
Underconditioned, niggly medical problems, that kind of thing.
Toulon have two physios, right, for their entire squad. It's huge. Like, people were not getting twice a day physio, which is incredible.
Yeah.
So it does happen.
The French government pays the wages of any injured player, which probably contributes to that.
Yeah.
We'll just buy another one. The government's picking this up.
Exactly. Well, that's a very in-depth news section, probably the most in-depth news.
It is.
Just when we're talking about payment and salary cap, have either of you seen the Austin Healey tweet from the Sunday papers this week about how much Ben Foden earns?
Oh, I'd love to guess how much Ben Foden earns. I'm guessing he's 250.
So shall I guess as well? I haven't seen
it. You can guess, but you're not going to get any information from this.
Okay.
So
I would guess that Ben Foden probably did his last contract while he was still an England player.
Probably.
And it's probably coming to the end of that now. And that's probably 4 years.
And a senior player as well.
I reckon he might... 280.
I would go for around that figure. Now this, it doesn't say what paper it's in. I'd guess Telegraph or Times, and one of the like money sections, one of the pull-out sections. And they ask him, they're talking about various different financial things. How much did you earn last year? Ben Foden says, I'd rather not say. And in square brackets, they've put the current team salary cap for Premiership rugby clubs is 7 million, meaning Ben Foden is likely to be on a base salary of about £600,000.
No.
Which they've divided it by 15.
They've divided by 11.
Have they?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know what they're doing.
So wow.
Someone doesn't know the number of players there are, even in a first team, and can't do maths.
So how far could you get with 11 players on 600k? I imagine you might be able to win a game, maybe.
I don't know. Just
in the championship.
What four positions would you do without?
So
You've got to drop a flanker. You've got to drop a winger.
Yeah, one so flanker, one 11, winger.
11 players, 600k. That means you've got another four players who can be on 10k each.
So you got 11 world beaters and four
academy 18-year-olds.
18-year-olds.
Right, so just, hang on. You're going hooker. I'd have to go flanker. You go on the wing.
We need one more
loser, and we can play with.
We'll play with Kurtley Beale, Charles Piatow,
80 minutes every week.
Retallick and Itoji.
But you know, actually, if they've done that, they are assuming there's only 11 players. So we just need 11 of the best players.
Yeah,
send me your 11 best players to take on a Premiership team. Any 11 in the world.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna be relying on you boys to fill in some of the gaps because I've. I've watched two games firsthand, but I've only watched two games.
Okay, so I have watched two games of Super Rugby, one game of Rugby League, three games of Rugby Union.
I watched a bit of Super Rugby. I watched Phil's beloved Canes, actually.
Against the Jaguares.
And the Jaguares are an absolute disgrace. I mean, the Hurricanes looked like, on the face of it, they were doing some incredible things, but the defence optional, just players falling on the floor.
Yeah. I think we all watch this separately.
Should we talk quickly about Super Rugby? Should we talk about the Premiership to give our listeners actually something they care about, and we'll come back to it?
Okay.
We'll come back to Super Rugby because it's a bit jovial. I would like to make this point about the Premiership this year, and I'd like you to agree or disagree. The top end of the Premiership is not as strong as it has been previous years. But there is a group of teams in the middle who are just absolutely nails. And I'm talking about Gloucester, I'm talking about Newcastle, Sale, maybe not Leicester, they've dropped off. But that middle now is so intense. And the Newcastle-Gloucester game, I thought, perfectly demonstrated that.
Well, we've asked this before a couple of weeks ago. So I'll sort of change the question from a couple of weeks ago slightly. Is the middle any better than it has been?
Oh, I think it is, yeah. I think Gloucester are miles better than... Well, actually...
Yeah, but they've gone up and Leicester have gone down and Sale are a bit up and Bath are down and...
Newcastle are up and Quins are down.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, you're right, because Quins and Bath are not as good as they were last year.
No.
Oh, definitely not. And Leicester, their last couple of games have been good, but across the whole season, this is probably their worst season for, well, as long as I can remember.
Yeah. So maybe. But then Gloucester are... genuinely very good, and Newcastle are genuinely very good.
Newcastle are definitely very good. The bit that strikes me is the inconsistency. That teams like Gloucester, who hadn't lost at home all season, beating all of the best teams, then lose to Newcastle. Now that's not a slight on Newcastle, but it's a demonstration of that inconsistency.
Mm.
Bath, inconsistent. They've beat Saracens this year. And then they were woeful against Quins this weekend.
So I think that the Gloucester inconsistency thing, I thought, as games go, as losses go, it was a good loss, i.e. it wasn't a ton of mistakes.
How many times do you... I didn't mean to talk across you there, JB.
Not a ton of mistakes, two good teams going at it, and one team came out better, and neither team would be disappointed with their performance.
And how many times do you lose... when the opposition gets 21 points and scores two tries and you score four tries and still lose?
Yeah, scoring four tries and no conversions is... No penalties, no conversions.
Maybe I'll go back to that and say, maybe there were some errors. But I mean, in open play, I was watching this and I was watching Newcastle going through their patterns because Newcastle are now a very good attacking force. And Gloucester just matched them. They matched them except for that first one, which is a relatively lucky try. They look really, really good.
It's a massive win for Newcastle.
It is.
Do you agree with looking at their fixtures that puts them in pole position for fourth place?
I've not looked at their fixtures going forward.
Are they in fourth?
They are.
It's down to them then. I mean, they're good enough to be there, and it's up to the other teams to unseat them.
Yes. So I think they play Leicester on the penultimate weekend.
So yep.
I think they go to Leicester.
They host Northampton next in a few weeks' time.
I expect them to win that.
Then they host... they travel to Worcester. So they should win that. They host Sale. And then...
do they go to Leicester?
Yeah.
Penultimate weekend, that's it.
Travel to Leicester that's and the host Wasps. But by the time they host Wasps, it could already be done and dusted because they're looking on they're looking like the next three games, certainly, they should win.
They should.
Yeah.
They're very, very savvy, which is what impressed me about them. So we mentioned that, yeah, Gloucester missed four conversions. They also didn't really have many kickable penalties because Newcastle are like whiter than white when it's in a kickable position. But when it's wide or out, they're really cleverly cynical.
I like that.
I do like that. That is... It's intelligence and it's decision making.
Exactly that. This leadership, intelligence.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
Billy Burns. Was Billy Burns kicking? Was it?
Yeah, he was. And then Billy Twelve Trees had the last shot.
He had the last shot, didn't he?
None of them easy.
No. No. But you'd expect one of those to be slotted.
And Gloucester's final five games include trips to Exeter, to Saracens. So. They could end up missing top six.
Yeah, well, there's always
that would
year.
Be an absolute hammer blow.
Yeah.
They've made strides, though.
Oh, no, undoubtedly, I completely agree. And they don't look so frail.
Yeah, and brittle. And there again, can you imagine, like, they missed top six this year, and then in the off-season, Quinns, Northampton, Leicester all get their act together, which is completely, completely possible. And they could be in the same situation they've been in year after year after year because it becomes a lot harder.
Yeah, this is their best opportunity to make top four or top six for a number of years. But still, I think Ackerman, I think he'll have more opportunity. I've said this before, I know. He'll have more opportunity over the summer to bring in the players that he
Johan
wants
Hansi
to bring
von Rensburg, for example.
Exactly.
Good sale, mate.
With rumours that Andrew Simmons is going to Newcastle. He's much in the Matavesi kind of mould.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah, so I think maybe next year could be Gloucester's year.
Yeah, maybe. Do you know, the Gloucester centre, I like, I've said it many, many times, I like Atkinson.
Yeah, I like Atkinson. Sausage legs 10.
Yeah.
Always gets his hands free, always offloading. Not his best game, actually, yesterday.
He's got a try, didn't he?
Yeah.
But I agree, not his best game in terms of...
Yeah, he's very slick.
Can I say one Gloucester player I want? In fact, can I say the Gloucester guys that weren't involved in the game... What a lovely bunch of lads. I mean, it's the same way with rugby all over. But there's a media room upstairs at King's Home, and the players' like lounge area is next to it.
Mm.
But for whatever reason, at halftime they came into the media room to make a cup of tea, and Owen Williams just walked in, and like, what a charming bloke. So I was just sat there on my own scribbling down some notes. He went, "All right, so do you want a cup of coffee? Lads, who wants coffee?" Ollie, you want a tea? You want a coffee? And he offered everyone in the room, whoever they were, whether it was the makeup person from BT Sport, whether it was the media manager, whether it was me, his teammates.
I do
just
love
a really
the way,
lovely bloke.
I do love the way that every Welsh person that you meet comes from the same village in the same valley.
All right, how's it going? What village, what area is that?
No idea, somewhere down south.
No, just a nice bunch. Jeremy Thrush, thoroughly lovely bloke as well.
No, why is he not playing at the moment? He's injured.
I don't know.
Why do you get all this news, Tim?
I don't want to be a nose with him. Like,
I do.
Talk about rugby. Let's talk about rugby. You know what I mean?
Oh, what's wrong, mate?
Their life is rugby. Talk to me about rugby. Yeah. Go on. Nah.
That's me.
I'll leave it to you. So, yeah, Newcastle we're massively impressed by. And also, I think very much in an Exeter mould, the way that they're growing. Loads of homegrown players.
Yeah.
Only adding guys that are under the radar that are maybe not loved elsewhere. Bringing them in and they suddenly take on this new lease of life.
Yeah, Mickey Young, who's been around, he was kind of touted when he first started as a potentially very, very high profile player. Went to Leicester, didn't really do anything.
Joel Hodgson, Northampton.
Yeah.
Didn't like him, let him go. Newcastle, got the best out of him.
I like watching him play.
For some reason, Leicester let Gonover leave. Do not understand.
Money.
That.
Must be money.
And,
there again.
Gonover's 33 or 34, something like that now. Wow. So whoever offers him the longest term deal, he will go to.
Yeah. True. But and then Matavesi.
Well, who was Chris Harris before he started playing at Newcastle?
I played against him when he was at Tynedale.
Did you really?
Yeah, yeah.
How old is he?
Oh, he was young. He's maybe 21.
He's 26, 27 now.
Yeah, 27, 20, that kind of age.
What is
he played. I remember playing at, up at Tynedale.
Where is Tynedale?
Northumbria.
Yeah, yeah. He was playing 15, and he was best man on the park that day.
What, even better than you?
Well, best man on from their side.
Yeah, yeah.
we got pumped in that game. We had two props yellow carded, and we just kept on giving penalties away at scrum time.
I got
Who's the best
nightmare.
Player you've played against?
Carlos Spencer.
No, oh, yeah, I didn't play against Carlos Spencer. I tell you who was very, very good. So I played Joe Marler when he was 18 or so. Big Luth. There's a load of players. One of the best who never made it. You might know him, Tim. He played for Nottingham.
Duffy.
Joe Duffy. What a player.
Hooker or tight head prop. Playing both.
Why did he not make it at Leicester? Because
he went to Leicester. He was a Kiwi. But
I was absolutely convinced he was going to be an international. I thought he would be the Leicester number one. He's one of the best hookers I've seen play in a live game.
He's
unreal.
He probably is the best player I've played against from the performance at the time. He was unreal. And moved from, like, I played against him once at hooker and once when he played tight end, and both times he was the most explosive runner, the best ball carrier, just most destructive player on the pitch.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, why did he not make it at Leicester? Does anyone know?
Just at the time they had, because he went in one direction, Tom Youngs went in the other. So Tom Youngs was making the conversion to hooker and went to Nottingham. Leicester signed Joe Duffy, but Joe Duffy was behind, I think George Shooter was there, and who was the other hooker that was there at the time? Anyway,
yeah,
whoever it was.
I'm just looking. He played for 5 seasons at Nottingham, joined Leicester for 2 years, 2009 to 2011, and then went back to Nottingham. And that's it. But yeah, he was a hell of a player.
Yeah. Yeah, he should.
Joe played against Joe Marler when he was 18, and people were talking him as a future England player. And just the shape on the boy as an 18-year-old was incredible. Anyway,
enough nostalgia. We mentioned Leicester there. Before we get on to Exeter Saracens, because that was the other real big game, you mentioned it earlier, Phil, Leicester's resurgence continues.
It do, yeah, certainly. And Worcester, who did have a few good games last week, were woeful. They were really awful. This week it looks pretty similar. But Leicester, Tolisso-Vianu, Manu Tuilagi looking dangerous, breaking
Tuilagi, Vianu and Brendan O'Connor.
Yeah, and Tamua is playing well in that,
he really
in that
is.
Fly half role. Those guys. And O'Connor, we've said it, but he adds the athleticism that back row needs.
He's a ball carrier, play. He's a scavenger at the breakdown, he's got hands, great handling.
Yeah.
He
balances that pack so well.
He does. I really wonder if he's going to get take him to South Africa, maybe. Have a look at him. Eddie does that, doesn't he? Brings people in, have a look, and then sink or swim.
Yeah.
Ditches them. I know we've kind of been over this before, but if Leicester continue to play well, is there any more Premiership before the big boys come back?
No. 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So 23rd, 24th, 25th of March, that weekend is the next Premiership game.
Yeah.
So if you've been on any players' Instagrams, a load of them are jetting off to Dubai or US.
Did you see Henry Slade's Instagram? He was sledging with his dog.
Oh, right.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
So if they're all going away, okay. What was I going to say now? I've completely forgotten.
Leicester.
Oh, Leicester, yeah. So if they're winning, and they're winning well, they beat Saracens, they've beat Worcester, actually playing nicely for a change. I'm not sure I would bring anyone into that team who's not already in it. I include George Ford.
I do think so. Matt Tate played inside centre.
Yeah,
didn't really do a lot. So if you can get Tamua, who's playing very well, just move him out one.
Yeah,
and have that extra distributor.
I don't know, because if
come on,
because if your key man, if you fly off is pulling the strings, you don't want to move him. I mean, they've not been playing particularly well with two distributors anyway. And when they've gone down to one, they seem to look better. I would carry on winning.
They've simplified their game. It's not just what they did last week. Is they went and played off nine a lot more, and they played off nine a lot more, played a lot more direct. They've got these key players fit and playing well. Vianu, Tuilagi getting better every game. Brendan O'Connor's come in all since all the international players were around last, and that's had more of an impact. I no, of course they'll pick him. We talked about this last week.
Vianu and Tuilagi coming back such a boost.
If you wanted to do it in a diplomatic way, you would say, well, look, George has played a lot of Six Nations. He just needs a rest. We're going to go with Tolosa. We're going to go with Tamil. One more game and see how it goes. And he wins that, then you've really got an issue. That's my view.
We'll see what happens anyway, because we spoke about this twice now.
I
think you should really put it on the board.
Well, no, absolutely not. Because I don't believe it. I'm just playing devil's advocate. They will play George Ford, but I'm not sure that I would, because jobs are on the line, and if we're winning, we're winning.
Exeter Chiefs had a second half performance today at home. That was very Exeter Chiefs.
Well, I didn't see it. I was watching Bath, so tell us about it.
So Saracens they've got 18 players unavailable through injury or international. Mm-hmm. I mean, that it is a massive amount that they've got. They are stretched and they're not playing well. One of the really concerning issues, bearing in mind one area they do have a lot of depth and a lot of strength still, is in front row. They got pumped in the scrums again.
This is not unusual.
No, because it's happening. It has been happening for weeks. They've acknowledged it's been happening for weeks, but they can't seem to turn it around. That's a big worry,
isn't it? Yeah. Skills in play.
No, he's out injured. So it's a big issue. Penalty try they conceded second half.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening to the Saracens scrum, because when I first noticed it was against, I can't remember who it was. It might be something that's against Worcester or someone. But it simply just wasn't going well. It's pretty worrying. And I don't think of Saracens as a team that relies so much on its talent, but more on the coaching and systems. And I kind of would have thought that they'd have done a bit better over the last couple of weeks. Mm. How did Ben Earl go?
He was good. He looked really explosive. Scored a great try.
Yeah.
In the first half.
Just looking at the stats, he's by a long way their best performing forward. And in fact, he might actually be their best performing player in terms of carries and attacking stats.
So this is his first start, and if I'm not mistaken, he's captain England at age grade.
Yeah, he's been captain at all age grade levels, I think, for England. He's a really promising player. They did lose Brad Barrett at half time, and he was groggy.
Oh, really?
Wasn't in a great shape throughout the first half.
He's not going to be starting next week for England, then?
Brad Barrett? No, definitely not. But they're just lacking players' leadership and... but they will come back. When you get 18 players coming back in, they'll be fine. Exeter was the one, but they had no excuses today. And Rob Baxter picked Joe Simmons at 10.
Did he?
Yeah, this was a remarkable pick, because the easy option and the obvious option would have been Steenson.
Yeah, captain on the field. I know he's not club captain, but because Jack Yendall doesn't start, because Luke Cowan-Dickie is an absolute
beast
of a player.
What was it?
Yeah, he's played some real
nice
stuff.
It was a game Exeter lost a few weeks ago. What was it?
Doesn't matter.
Well, it matters to me, because Luke Cowan-Dickie started. He didn't finish it, but he started, and he was a monster.
Yeah, he has been for a few weeks. He's been playing like a man possessed.
Yeah, the Montpellier game for me, where they had just monster after monster, and he just kept on sitting them down time and time again.
Yeah, but Joe Simmons, man of the match. That's and very looked impressive. Very assured. And I love the way Rob Baxter talks, and what he said was that the way to do it, and the way that his philosophy is, he wants to make a positive choice when he brings a youngster in. He wants them to have earned the selection, be playing with form and confidence, and then they slot in, rather than because there's an injury or because it's not going well.
And Wasps, sorry.
So it's like a really positive selection. So he said Joe Simmons has been that good in training that I had to give him a start. And again, he hit the ground running and looked every bit of Premier
Steen come off the bench?
For a few minutes. But I'm not sure he would have done if Joe Simmons went off for a HIA.
So Sam Simmons was on the bench as well. Did he get any game time?
Yeah, he got a little bit.
But
did a few nice things.
Okay. Good. Just thinking of one eye on England here for next weekend. Is he the man to come in and add some dynamism to that back row?
Is there anyone... So can you tell anything about who is allowed to play and who isn't allowed to play as to who will be selected for next week?
I think you can tell something. Like George Cruz was allowed to play.
Yeah.
Marrow, Joe Launchbury, and Courtney Laws weren't.
Were all held.
So yeah.
No, were they not?
You can definitely read into that.
That does just reflect the last few games as well, where those three have all started, and obviously Cruz hasn't.
I'm just checking the Wasps team. For God's sakes. I'm just having a look now.
So in summary, some concerns are Saracens, but I wouldn't be overly worried because they are missing so many players. They're still well-placed.
They just
need to push on and get a home semi if that's what their battle is.
I'm not saying, but just saying, James Haskell didn't start for Wasps.
Well, you're saying that like it's proving some point you've said.
No, it's not. I'm just thinking that he might have a look in for England this week.
I think he might do. Because if it was up to me, I wouldn't be playing 3 second rows. I wouldn't be starting 3 second rows. They need more pace. I'm not saying.
If it was up to me, I agree with you, Phil. And if it was up to me, the answer would not be James Haskell.
They don't need more pace. They need more work at the breakdown. And getting there quickly, which is not the same as running fast.
True. So, interesting. Do I briefly touch on that game? Because I've not seen a second of it. I've not seen any highlights. The only thing I've seen is London Irish were close but missed out on any bonus points because they scored 2 tries and they were 8 points off. And Dai Young said the better team lost.
Yes, Joe Simpson, I just saw him tweet the same. Yeah, said felt sorry for London Irish, the best team lost.
Yeah, so that's disappointing for them because this is a good time to play someone like Wasps.
And they've got 3 weeks off.
Not to get anything out of the game is very disappointing, particularly on the back of the win last week.
Well, bonus points aren't enough now anyway.
Yeah.
No. They need a minimum of 3 wins.
Which they could still technically get, but
seems unlikely now.
Yeah. You'd say travelling to Wasps, if you get 2 bonus points or something out of it, it's not the worst result in the world. But, I'm kind of talking. They're already down. So. Yeah, I'm trying to sugarcoat it.
Tell me about the Omni Shambles that was Quinn's Bath.
No. Let's not talk about the Omni Shambles that's Quinn's Bath. Let's talk about a pre-Omni Shambles, which was Reds versus Brumbies. Very, very briefly. And then we can go back into Premiership. Just to spice things up a bit. So, when you talk about shambles, that is exactly the correct word to describe.
Omni-shambles.
Omni-shambles, Quinn's Bath. I have not seen a game like Reds versus Brumbies for quite some time.
Reds won this, didn't they?
They won it. So Reds have won it after culling everyone that you'd ever know from the Reds team. Like, you know, there are a few people that you know, but I think there's 4 or 5 players that are deemed surplus to requirement or just not required, who are still getting paid by the ARU in some cases, like Mr. Quade Cooper. So I don't know what he's up to. I think he's just working out with stuff. In fact, I think he made the news this week. He got arrested or something, or I'm sure something happened.
With Quade Cooper, the only thing I can tell you is I've seen a couple of videos of him kicking sticks topless.
Whilst I ramble on, just Google Quade Cooper. I'm sure something's happened to him.
Okay. Quade Cooper. Sorry, Google Quade Cooper topless or just Quade Cooper.
Be safe, do both. So the
safe search on or off?
Be safe.
All right. Quade Cooper. Go on, sorry.
Seems with a fan. Anyway, defence absolutely optional. Trips into the 22, pretty much at will, but no one could score. Like, nobody could score. They crossed they either dropped the ball over the try line, they got held up. It was the most bizarre game. A mixture between, like, lack of effort and then lack of finishing. So, I don't know. It's just Australian rugby is in a weird place. It doesn't know what it is. It's not New Zealand rugby.
The Rebels are up there at the top, aren't they? 2 bonus point victories.
I didn't watch the Rebels, so I couldn't tell you.
That's what I was going to say. So, maybe this is the turnaround in Australian rugby.
I did see a bit of the Rebels against the Sunwolves. They've got a lot of names.
Yeah, you said, didn't you?
The Rebels have got... So, they've hoovered up a load of people from... all the good people from Western Force.
It's my favourite nickname in Super Rugby as well. Rebels is just cool.
The Rebels.
Mm. It's very Star Wars. I like it.
It is. I just don't know if Australian rugby has an identity. So if you think about England, you know exactly what England are. You know, big pack of forwards. You know, there's an English way of playing. There's a New Zealand way of playing, isn't there? There's a South African way of playing. You know, what is the Australian way of playing?
The Australian way of playing is players with incredibly high skill levels, interchangeable positions, and all about the back line.
That's the historic way of playing. Now it just feels like kind of getting NRL rejects or NRL, the NRL guys that they can afford to get and slot them into some kind of back line.
Yeah, fingers crossed they might be the answer to all our woes. Yeah. And sometimes they're really, really good, and they're still not the answer.
Mm.
So it just seems like a mess. Hopefully they'll, you know, if Rebels are good and they can build a good core and a basis of an Australia team, they could have a resurgence, but I just don't see it.
Quid Cooper News.
Yes.
Headline from news.com.au.
Check out his rig.
No. Quade Cooper comes off second best after running with a fan.
Oh, right, so he didn't get arrested. I saw second best and fan, so I don't actually know. A run in with a fan?
Yeah.
Oh, not running against, like a sprint, I thought you meant that.
No. After running, he has been hit by a fan.
Doesn't sound like what a fan would do.
In a gym, corporate box gym in Australia.
Was this fan trying to lift weight and Quade Cooper was stood right next to him, just flexing in the mirror, topless, the whole time, putting him off?
Not quite, but you're remarkably close. This fan was relatively inactive, because this was not a fan of Australian rugby. This was a wall-mounted air-blowing fan.
Ah!
he's wearing a baseball cap and it's like head height, and he just walks into it.
The most benign story I've ever heard.
Yeah.
So the reason I thought...
The headline, yeah.
Yeah. So I just Googled Quade Cooper very quickly to look on Wikipedia, and I saw these headlines. So I was in the middle of rugby, so he's come off second best a fan or what have you. I assumed he was in trouble with the law again.
Nope. That's the danger of clickbait headlines.
There we go. Sorry, Quade. I do take it back.
Shall we get into the other omni shambles of Quins versus Bath?
Yeah, go for it.
Tell me about this.
We don't need to talk about this for long.
Good. Okay, briefly tell me about the omni shambles at the stoop.
Neither team played particularly well. Both made a load of mistakes. Catrachilis, who played instead of Marcus Smith, did a few nice things, but also gave the ball away cheaply a few times. And
I think we need to give that guy a break, because that horrible jaw injury he had, it's his first game back.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong. First game back, he's just not as good as Marcus Smith. Unless there's something else I've missed, Marcus Smith is the real deal.
Yeah, but he's 18, so, and he's played a lot of rugby.
Playing more.
Yeah, so I think it was the right thing to do to change up the squad. Bath, they had long periods, particularly in the second half, where they were inside Quinn's 22, and they just didn't seem to know what to do.
I mean, Bath didn't win it, actually. I mean, the scoreline flatters Quinn's. I thought for long periods, Bath were the more dominant side.
Certainly in that second half, they were.
The Bath front row are a mess, aren't they? I mean, like, you've got three supposedly England guys there. Did Dunn start?
No, Dunn's injured at the moment.
So who was it?
Batty.
Batty, yeah.
So their only hooker.
Who came on at hooker then?
Nathan Charles.
Nathan Charles, that's right.
Another mid-season signing.
Yeah, so it started with Batty, Abono and Henry Thomas. I expect them to do more.
They were playing with James Wilson at 10 again, who last week was man of the match and kind of won it in the end. This week,
fans were calling for Josh Lewis.
The honeymoon period was over, because he didn't have a great game. Some of his decision-making and some of his kicking wasn't great. But he's not a 10.
Yeah,
he's been asked to play there.
And Benny Taps wasn't great. What was that horrendous kick that we saw? It was on an advantage, mind. But it was still a horrendous kick.
They did it a number of times.
And
it was
terrible decision-making by Will... Not Will Harrell, he was all right. The other one. Yeah, was Will Harrell?
Tom Homer.
Yeah.
Just horrendous kicking. So here's a list of mid-season signings from Bath. James Wilson, Benny Taps, Josh Lewis, Aled Brew, Will Hurrell, Darren Allinson, and Cooper Vuna.
That's just the backs.
That's just the backs. Nathan Charles up.
The most interesting thing about this was it happened in the last 30 seconds when Marcus Smith intercepted... I can't remember who threw the pass. But
someone.
Intercepted someone from his own 22... had a clear 8-yard head start over Zach Mercer. Marcus Smith, who was fresh, had only been on the pitch 5 minutes. Zach Mercer, who'd done an awful lot of hard work, and Mercer hunted him down.
I can't make my mind up on Mercer, whether he's going to be international standard or not.
He's so athletic.
He is, isn't he?
But he needs to gain about a stone.
But then he will not be athletic.
Well, if he gains it in the right way... Intelligent, a very intelligent off-season on the south coast of France with some vitamin S.
What
shape was his dad?
Don't know. He was a rugby league player, wasn't he?
Yes. Google Zach Mercer's dad shape.
Topless. Safe search off.
Gary Mercer. Let's have a look at it.
Because there'll be a bit of genetics involved here.
Gary Mercer.
Because like Gareth Delve was a Bath number eight that came through, and his dad was World's Strongest Man or Wales's Strongest Man, and was an incredible slice. I remember
Delve was an incredible slicer.
He was an unbelievable specimen. I remember watching. Did my brother play with him? Or no, he was coming through the year or two below in Bath, and so I think.
Well, he's 32, I think, isn't he?
I used to go and watch Gareth Delve play for the A team or the under 21s at some point, just when I was in Bath with nothing else to do. And the talent of the lad as a kid, frightening.
Do you know what Gareth Delve's doing with himself now?
Is he trying to become Wales' strongest man?
No.
Let me guess. I reckon he will be. What will Gareth Delve be good at? He will be a bouncer.
Working doors, yeah.
No. Gareth Delve, I believe, is team manager of Bristol.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a deal. A little Gareth Delve fact.
Cool.
Sorry, have you come up with any conclusive Zach Mercer's dad's shape facts?
So I can tell you he was 5'11".
Was he?
He's a wing/fullback/second row second row, which is an unusual combination.
That is.
But,
so was Matt Banahan.
Rugby league, yeah. Played right centre. For Warrington. He played Leeds, Halifax, Warrington, Leeds again, Cass, and Bradford Northern.
So what does this tell us
and
about
New Zealand? I don't know.
Maybe he's not going to fill out massively. I know Steve Borthwick, for example, is a player who really struggled to put on weight.
Yeah.
He
couldn't put weight on.
And he would atrophy. He'd lose weight during the season.
Oh, tell me about it.
But anyway, he's incredible. Hold on a minute. What's going on here? You chose to watch Queens v Bath.
Yeah, I want to see it. I want to see Dimitri Kachkaelis play.
I wanted to watch Saracens Exeter, but JB accosted me at my house. I was just coming back from the gym.
Hi, mate.
JB was there waiting for me.
In his kitchen.
Making me watch.
We're going to watch this
Queens
game that's of very little consequence to end of season positions.
Well, do you know what? I thought both of them were going to be inconsequential, really, because the top two will be the top two regardless. And the...
Well, surely Wasps are hunting Saracens down now for the second place.
Maybe, actually. Maybe.
Must be close.
And I just wanted to see the two fly-offs play.
Yeah.
Thought to me, it had more interest because I'm boring. But yeah, that's why I wanted to watch it. It was all...
It was
they were evenly matched. That's the only upside to it.
And it was entertaining for the two of us to watch because we just slagged off both teams for 80 minutes.
Yeah, I suppose that's... by the way, Wasps are second now.
Oh, are they? Well, yeah. I take it back completely.
Newcastle are only 3 points behind Saracens in third.
Wow.
Newcastle are only 4 points behind Wasps in second.
Wow. And they've won the same number as both of those teams, 11.
So me and Phil saw another game this week. We won't talk about it too long, but it was rugby league. We watched Hull versus Warrington.
Oh my God.
Let's just forget about the actual game and talk about the two red cards.
Two of the most ridiculous.
Send him off. Send the dirty get off.
Oh my word. Two of the best rugby
get him off the
red
field
you've ever seen.
The first one was a tackle from behind and just a complete swinging arm to the head that
knocked him out in mid-flight.
Yeah, knocked him out immediately. One of the most blatant red
cards. Let the boys play.
You could ever see.
It's a sort of red card, right? That if it occurred in Union, Twitter would have. I mean, as it happened,
Alison Pollock would have.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
It was so the guy is lights out as he hits the ground. There's a bit of a discussion. Should we send him off? Should we not send him off? Like, if this was rugby union, he would be banished. He wouldn't play
again for 2 years.
You wouldn't play again. And the next one was even better. It was so rugby league. It was a headbutt from 8 yards away. So, like, the guy... No, maybe not 8 yards, maybe 5 yards. Point is, this guy had to walk slowly at walking pace to his opponent and then sort of headbutt him. But he didn't even headbutt him properly. He just went, like, head-to-head, and the referee's like, what are you doing?
The player who received the headbutt just turned around and looked at the ref with his arms out like that. You can't do that. What's going on?
Like, this is why it's the greatest game. High skill sets, low IQs, massive amounts of violence. Let's get into it.
With the, I mean, clearly that high shot sounds like it was, you know,
terrific.
It was bad. Outrageous. It would be the higher tariff on a rugby union
100%.
Ban, and rightly so by the sound of it. I do wonder whether sometimes the starting point of accidents happen and you can't stop all accidents would be a really good thing to refresh. Just shake rugby union a little bit. David Halafonua against Sinoti in the Gloucester Newcastle game. I just want to shake rugby a little bit and go, remember, accidents happen and you can't stop them all. But it seems like when someone does have contact with a head, even if when it's by accident and as much caused by the player with the ball as the player without the ball.
The Halafonua one was not a card in my mind.
Not a card.
How can you wrap your arms? They said no intent to wrap the arms, but he got hit in the head.
It was head-to-head because Sinoti stepped and accidents happened.
So when, was it Dan Lydiot got yellow carded for a chop tackle when he didn't wrap the arms because someone's knee collided with his head? So he's out cold, yeah, yellow?
That's what I mean. When there's an injury or head contact, it almost feels a little bit at the moment like, right, we've got to have a response to this and it has to be with a card.
Yeah. What was your reason for you were okay with the yellow?
So my initial reaction, and I probably would have gone for no yellow for Halafonua.
Was it reckless?
I would have defined that as a rugby incident. I could justify the yellow card.
In other words, you would have said, you would have defined that as LTBP.
LTBP, yeah. Exactly. Or as World Rugby say, rugby incident.
Yeah.
The reason I'm okay with it being a yellow card was not because of the wrap in the arms, which the commentators said, which was nonsense. Because I think he was actually making an attempt to wrap his arms and then there's head contact.
Yeah.
I do think he was reckless under the World Rugby definition, because he went, so you know Sinoti is not just going to run straight at your shoulder, he's going to step last
minute. He's a rolling ball of barbed wire.
That's exactly what he is.
Precisely, he's a rolling ball of barbed wire that could go in any direction at any time. And Halafonua, like, propels himself forward to give a massive hit last second, just as Sinoti changes direction. So I think it kind of does fall under the rugby world definition of recklessness, therefore, because of the consequences, yellow card. So I'm okay with the yellow card. I don't think they got there in the right way, but also I would have been fine with a LTB plea.
What about LTBP? Right, a multicoloured card, like a rainbow card, maybe? And the LTBP. So instead of
the LTBP card, yeah.
And these that means play on. So everyone's looking at it. Play on, LTBP.
So one of the unintended consequences of this, I think it could already be happening, is one of the things we love about the players that come from the Pacific Islands, or whatever the term you're allowed to use is, I don't know.
Islands in the Pacific.
Well, I apologise if that's the wrong...
Islands of Pacific location.
I know they're all different and unique and individual, but I'm sorry I'm lumping them all together, whatever. But we love that high explosive, high impact game that they bring. Guys like Brian Lima had the nickname of the chiropractor for some of his monstrous hits in the past. And that's part of the culture, it's part of the genetics, it's part of the way that they play and the skill sets that they have. And I just worry that they're being disproportionately affected by this. Because, you know, that Gabby Lovabalavu hit...
Oh, that was nonsense.
..the other week. Yeah. I wonder if that had been exactly the same, but not as much of a wallop hit, whether anything would have happened. So I'm not suggesting that there's anything racist going on here. That's not what I mean, but it's just...
If it wasn't so physical.
If it wasn't so hot, if the tackles weren't such high impact, would anyone care, even if they made contact in the same place?
Mm. Mm.
But anyway.
Sale Sharks had a nice victory.
Great victory.
Noticeable, because Denny Salamona is only... I think he's the first ever player to get two first-half hat-tricks.
Yeah. Of 17 that there's been in the Avicii Premiership since conception.
Yeah.
And he's only been playing in it for 2 years.
Yeah, is that Stuart Farmer who comes up with these things? The stat guy?
Russ Petty's normally very good for this kind of thing.
Yeah, it's one of the two. So go and check out those Twitter accounts, because I need to give credit to someone. It's not mine. I've not gone through the first off hat-tricks.
They did their best. Sale Sharks did their best to throw it away.
Yeah, standard.
Northampton. It was a really bad second half by Sale. Really horrific first half by Northampton. One little thing which I think with all the other stories going on, it won't get a lot of column inches, but Sail Sharks have got form on this. This has happened before.
Uh-oh, what have we done? What have they done?
You heard that then.
Edit.
What have we done? No, you're not editing that out. You can't erase, you can't rewrite history. One of the members of staff on the sidelines, when in the dying minutes when Northampton were trying to get back and they could have drawn level or got close at one point, or even won it potentially, one of the Sail Sharks members of staff threw a ball on when Northampton were trying to take a quick tap penalty.
And we've spoke about this before,
They've done it before.
What do we call them? Diamond geezers.
Diamond geezers.
Yeah, this is the thing that we spotted. So there's a band of them, and they are pretty irritating on the sideline towards opposition players. I've seen it a few times, actually. It's not a good look, that, you know.
Yeah. Wayne Barnes took his name and sent him to the stand.
I bet I know exactly who it is.
I think I know who it is as well. And I haven't even seen a picture or seen the video. But I think I know who it is. But they've got form on this.
Yeah. And it's not a good look.
It's not a good look.
It was Stuart Farmer. You can give credit to
Stuart Farmer. What? Who threw the ball on the field?
Stuart Farmer has not thrown a ball on the field. Stuart Farmer is an excellent statistician.
Oh right, yes.
they won well, but there's a little cloud hanging over it.
Yeah,
but it makes no difference to the 5 points.
The thing is, though, right? So this goes back to booing. Do you know when you know people go, don't boo the kicker. It's disgusting. So on and so forth. Okay. If that's the culture of that nation, or if that's the culture of that club, I have no problem with the Welsh fans booing, because that's what they do. And if all the English fans want to, it's all about. So if the Sale culture is to heckle and throw balls, as long as they're true to themselves.
Well, heckling's one thing. Throwing a ball on the field so that the freak is another thing.
Well, look, it is what it is.
So now you're a fan of culture when it suits.
I'm just saying, okay, it's about club identity. And the more unique identities that we can have, the better.
Absolutely.
Are the games better for a big character like Steve Diamond? And I'm sure this has nothing to do and doesn't reflect on Steve Diamond in any way, shape or form anyway. So I don't know.
I don't know
why I just brought him up.
It absolutely doesn't.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Right, what are we doing next? Should we do predictions for the Six Nations?
I think, unless we've got any other news. Oh, that's one thing I did want to mention. Semi Radrada.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be playing for Fiji. Excellent. Fijian-born player. He's played for Fiji in sevens. Has played for Fiji and Australia in rugby league, interestingly.
Has he?
Yeah.
Oh, Radrada, sorry.
Radrada, who is playing his trade at Toulon as a wing or outside centre. He's been playing. He's a big, strong boy. He's absolutely stacked. And he's going to be playing for Fiji. Yeah, excellent.
What is it with rugby players at the minute? You type in Semi Radrada and pictures of him come up at all topless.
Damn right. You got the same search settings as me, I think, Tim.
He's a big unit.
He's a massive unit. There's a picture of him, Nonu, and a couple of the other boys in the gym in Toulon recently. He's enormous.
Is he?
Yeah. I didn't realise just how big he is.
I think, interesting.
He's in tremendous shape as well.
So he's opted to play for Fiji, and
he has.
And in doing so, is putting pride and national identity ahead of cash.
Well, yeah. Not
in a sort of rare case of that happening.
Not so quickly, Timothy.
Why is that?
Well, because he's got 18 months before World Cup. I think he's got a steroid ban in Australia. So he can't play for them and he can't play for France. So he just wants to go to World Cup.
Well, he could play. He couldn't play for France yet because of he's only been in Toulon for 6 months or so.
Short career. I mean, I'm not sure Semi Rodrada is the is the pinnacle of morals. Maybe he loves Fiji. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he wants to go to World Cup. I don't really care.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't begrudge someone getting cash. I don't begrudge Nathan Hughes from earning $25,000 a game rather than £200 a game or whatever it is. Whatever the Fijians.
Yeah, that's got to stop, hasn't it? It's ridiculous. And the other one was?
The exceptional talent who's currently injured, who plays for Clermont, Aliveretti Raka.
Oh, fantastic. Fiji have got the pair of them. That's such good news.
Well, not as good news, because at the same time that the Fijian rugby union were calling for Radrada, they also made an offering to Aliveretti Raka, and he's turned them down, presumably with the intention of playing for France, it's disappointing to see from his side. It will be fascinating because the start of this season he was the most explosive player in top 14 and in European Champions Cup.
Bloody hell.
If France do not take him up and do not select him when they have the opportunity to, that would be a real test of their morals, because they made a big thing about this.
Laporte, when he came in, he did.
6 months or 9 months ago, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think it'll be fair. Players.
Sorry?
I don't think it'll be fair.
In what way?
Well, because Raka's really good.
That is a very compelling argument.
Yeah.
And I think that argument might actually win for the
He's really good.
How French can electors. Laporte spin it? Let's help Laporte here. We can be his PR agency. How can we spin it?
He's really good. He's a good boy. He works hard.
No, but how can he do it without having to admit that he's doing it?
He was already.
He can.
How long has he been in France?
How long has he been in France?
So he's.
Well, look. I had a lot of. So if I'm Laporte, I'm going to write. I've got a lot on my mind at the moment with all the corruption in investigations, and quite frankly, it just slipped past the radar. But now he's in. It'd be unfair of me to deny this lad a chance to play. To play for the country he loves and I love.
So he joined the Clermont Academy in 2014.
How old is he now?
He's 25 now.
So he joined when he was 19.
Yeah. So he's been in France for 4 years. The country that he loves, obviously. 19, 20. He's got to be some kind of patriotism thing.
Can I ask, what's everyone's favourite stats to look up after a game?
I do like meters made and defenders beaten.
Oh, do you?
Is that just because of fantasy rugby draft, or you?
I do find those two as a measure of individual player performance offensively, they're pretty good.
My favourite stat of the lot,
yeah,
is tackles made. So I'm just astonished by some of the tackles made. And I'm just looking at sales tackles made. Ross Harrison, 23.
Which is very good for a prop.
Wilgriff John, 22.
I mean,
Josh Giles, 24.
It is impressive, but they're, as ever with statistics, there are lies, damn lies and statistics, because you never measure the quality. It's just a number.
Yeah.
And that could be someone coming on a pick and go diving at your feet and you just push them down on the ground.
Yeah,
or it could be in the case when Jacques Berger had that game against Clermont and had 37 tackles.
Ross Harrison,
that was 36 monstrous tackles that had material effect on the game. On his face, yeah.
I'm going to have to have a look at the other stats because, I like to compare them, but Ross Harrison made 23 tackles and missed zero. Ostrakov, 23, missed zero. Wilgriff John, 22, missed zero. Strauss, missed zero, made 24. Cameron Neal, 21,
That sounds
zero.
To me like a team that are picking and going.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. It could do, yeah.
It really does. Exactly.
Yeah, you're right there, mate.
Just for Semi Rodrada, there's a picture of him next to Mar Nonu.
Whoa. Ooh, he's stacked, isn't he?
Wow, he's a big boy.
He is a big
I'd take
unit. Good luck to you, Jay.
Okay, shall we do some things for next week? Lyon beat Toulon at home last night as well.
Did they?
Yeah.
Fair play.
So Lyon are going great guns.
When's Fernsey back? Fit? Is he good? Is
not
it next
for this season,
season,
I don't think.
The silverback.
Ooh. Although if they make the playoffs, they might want to bring him back.
Yeah, because the playoffs
be ready
go,
for that?
Well, the playoffs go through to about mid-August, don't they?
August 2019. they start the new season while the old one's still playing.
If Eddie Jones had wanted a player to just come, oh, be a ball-carrying option, blow out some rucks. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Oh, well.
What have you done, Carl? What are you doing?
Let's just talk this through. So,
Carl, what? No, he's made a bad. I understand the call.
He's made a great decision,
but it's not a good call. He will regret that, I think.
Potentially, but just the money's so much better.
The money's pretty good.
Yeah, but no.
So let's just quickly talk this through. Hypothetical: Billy Vunipola injured, Nathan Hughes injured, Sam Simmons gets injured. Nathan Hughes is not fit like he was last weekend, but Carl Ferns is fit in the form that he was playing in last season, where he was the top ball carrier in the top 14. Does that deem exceptional circumstances for Eddie Jones to bring him in?
Probably not when his name's Zach Mercer as an actual player in his squad.
Yeah, is that Mercer?
He's got him as an apprentice player, hasn't he?
In the last...
No, proper player.
In the last squad, he took the asterisk off.
Really? Mm. Interesting. Hmm.
But I'd pick him.
Zach Mercer is a very good broken field runner.
They just do such different things.
Yeah.
Start with Carl Ferns, finish with Zach Mercer.
That's a good combo.
Oh, man, with a World Cup looming in the prime age, he's just... I know him, I like him, and I understand he's made the financial decision for his family, and that's, I can't help thinking that many years from now, when the money doesn't seem like such a big deal, he's going to think back on that decision and regret it.
You might be right. You may well be right.
Possibly. Yeah, he's 28, 6'3", 19.5 stone. And he knocked out Gavin Henson.
That's right. can I tell that story?
No, leave that one alone.
He also made a current England player cry, but I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, leave that one alone.
Ooh, interesting.
Leave that one alone.
Fixtures for next week?
Yeah, should we do a brief one when we know later in the week?
Yeah,
when we know the teams for the international game. But what we can do right now is Phil. Eddie Jones is...
Well, let's play guess the England back row.
Yes, Eddie Jones gets some... Eddie Jones suddenly catches your little illness you had the other week and says, Phil, take over, pick the team.
Yeah.
What'd you do?
If we're just talking back row, I would probably start Rob Shaw, Sam Simmons as 7, Nathan Hughes as 8.
Wow.
That'd be my start. And I would drop... it doesn't really matter which ones are the second row. I'd probably drop Laws to the bench and play Itoji and Launchbury. But I'd be happy with any combination of those second rows on the pitch.
I would go with... We're going to do back 5. Rob Shaw at 6. I think Nathan at 8. And Haskell at 7. And I would start with Laws... and Itoji. Do you know what? I've had a thought about England captaincy as well. It would be mad to have a look at Courtney Laws. He's probably the best player in England at the moment.
Has he ever captained Northampton?
Yes, he has.
Has he? Mm. Not permanently.
Good question. Don't know.
Because Hartley's been... But Hartley never plays.
Rob Shaw, Underhill, Hughes...
Okay.
Launchbury and Itoji with Laws to come on and make an impact off the bench.
Yeah.
Simmons on the bench.
Yeah.
And I just make sure you commit numbers to the breakdown and smash it off the breakdown, but I go Underhill 7.
The other decision for me is 10, 12, 13.
Yeah. I think
he'll keep it the same.
I think I'll keep it the same.
I think I would probably keep it the same.
I think I would. 24 out of 26 games, and they have been good, but you just need to
Let's not make this crisis a disaster.
Yeah.
No, I do have concerns about George Ford when he's not behind a dominant pack.
Yeah.
I go Farrell, Tail.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, Farrell and Tail.
Yeah, I'd like to.
So much more whiskey.
I'd like to see that, but I think he will keep it the same. And they have won 24 games.
Yeah.
Easy games, aren't they? There's only one hard game. I mean, which were the hard games that they've won?
And would you still go May, Watson, Brown? I think Daly comes back in on the wing.
For who?
Daly for May.
What I could actually see more likely is Daly coming in, Watson dropping to 15, back. And Brown dropping out.
Maybe.
Eddie Jones does like Mike Brown, and he's
almost
generally his, so solid.
He's almost put his reputation on Mike Brown too.
Yeah,
I think Daly will start on the bench because he's not played in a while. Although, but you got Noel as well.
Yeah,
Noel at 13 is the other shout that everyone.
No.
I've seen it maybe once for
Exeter. Ridiculous idea.
I'd much rather consider Teo at 13 or Daly at 13.
Yeah.
Not Noel at 13.
It just makes no sense.
With an extra week's gap, the hysteria around an England defeat does seem a bit nuts.
Yeah.
And I think Ben Kay actually had a great point on Rugby Tonight when he said, hold on.
All three columnists in the Times were talking about Downfall 2018 as if it's a new thing.
They weren't talking about Downfall 2018.
Oh, are you sure?
Are you taking right? Let's just remember that the columnists don't write the headlines of the stories; they just write the copy. So, have you read the story, or have you just read headlines?
I've read the story. So Steve, Delaney wants the captain gone.
Yeah, okay, that's not Downfall 2018.
It pretty much is, mate. When you get rid of your captain, it's pretty much.
No, so in which case, it's been Downfall 2018 for about 3 years.
Well, that's fair because that is what Delaney has been saying. But it does sound much more negative. Like, oh, he's lost a game, we've got to go. What's wrong with Mario Itoje? I think that's...
We've been saying that?
Yep.
Yeah,
everyone's and been highlighting that it's been
fatigue
happening.
Fatigue is the very easy answer.
Which is
there.
Exactly what I said prior to Six Nations. And Stephen Jones must make at least 5 changes to keep France at bay. That is downfall. I mean, if you're making 5 changes, that's downfall.
Okay, well, I think when we went round it, I'd prefer to come back to the position I just got to. We just chatted about the team and went, you could keep it the same and we could maybe change a couple of players. You must change 5 to compete with France.
Yeah, I'm with you. Do you know why I'm with you more than Stephen Jones? Is because just from a principle of building a team, if you come this far and everyone's fit and you're dropping 5, this isn't good. I mean, it's really, really bad.
If he does drop, like genuinely drop 5, then...
Disaster.
That is a disaster. That is... We are on call for downfall.
Yeah,
2018. If he drops 5, there's no way that Eddie Jones is going to drop 5 players.
And Ben Kay's perspective on Rugby Tonight, I thought was great, which was, hold on a minute. We lost to Scotland. Scotland lost to New Zealand by 5 points. They beat Australia in Australia and then beat them at Murrayfield.
They got hammered by Wales.
In Wales.
They did get hammered by Wales.
But as he said, Scotland in Scotland are a match for anybody. And they got close to beating New Zealand.
Yeah, but how about France and France? And this team, this is what we've got to remember about England. It isn't about being a good international, respectable team. I mean, that's what most Welsh fans would be happy with. A respectable international team that can upset a big name every now and again. That's what they want. England has got one goal, to be the best team in the world, bar none.
Yeah, win a World Cup.
Yeah, so they can't be talking about, hey, Scotland and Scotland. It should be Scotland and Scotland get absolutely demolished and then France and France absolutely demolished.
They'll be disappointed they lost and that they didn't play well. But to talk about panic and...
That's exactly what I'm saying.
And a huge overhaul.
Panic. Yeah.
They
won't panic.
To their credit, I don't think they will. But I think they could very well lose against France and I think they will lose against Ireland. And then downfall is... Well, let's hope downfall doesn't turn into free fall 2018.
I've got one more thing before we're done on this podcast.
Yes,
so we will do a podcast once we know the teams for the side. I completely forgot to do this at the start.
Oh, what have you got?
I'm really annoyed. I've got something. So I'm going to find a way to give these away. But in the meantime, we can display them in the dungeon. I've got Jackson Ray's boots.
Wow.
Wow.
Why?
Does Jackson Ray know?
Jackson Ray does know. Because if you look at this one, the stud came out or didn't snap off or anything. I think you could put another stud in.
Screwed, yeah, yeah.
But he basically went, I don't really want them. What you look about size 12. There you go.
Why don't you broadcast in them? That could be your thing.
Broadcasting Jackson Ray's boots.
Yes.
So anyway, they can go on that table there.
Oh wow, Jackson Ray's actual boots.
Jackson Ray's actual boots can go on that on that table in the dungeon.
And this is from Sandy Park Dirt.
From Sandy Park Dirt.
Maybe we should get like little maybe to make the dungeon complete, we can get jam jars of dirt from each ground.
We could just do that out your garden and put a bit of different colour in different...
That was a bit sandy, was it from Sandy Park?
Yeah, exactly. It's a good idea.
What competition can we run for Jackson Ray's boots?
I'll think of one, but I just thought they'd look good there in the meantime.
Hmm. Very
excellent.
Nice.
Well then, Tim, they might be coming to training with me on Tuesday. What size is he?
12.
Oh, no, they're not. They're too big for me.
So, initial predictions, I just want one word, that is the team that's going to win. No justification, no qualification, no nothing. Just the team that's going to win. Tim Cocker, Ireland, Scotland.
In Scotland, yeah?
In Ireland.
In Ireland, oh, Ireland.
Ireland.
Ireland. France, England.
England.
Get it on the board, France.
I don't think that qualifies going on a board.
England. England.
It doesn't.
And Wales, Italy.
Wales.
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 Wow.
There we go.
What a week in the rugby. And we'll see you in Madrid for it.
Oh, my word. So excited.
I can't
so
wait.
Nervous.
I can't wait for Madrid. It's going to be such good fun. Watching the Six Nations, watching Ireland, Scotland, then France, England, in O'Neill's. On the Saturday afternoon.
I'm watching Spain, Germany and Wales, Italy.
Spain, Germany. I wish Hans Wild, the porn star, billionaire rugby man, would release all of his players for that game just to make it a good spectacle. I hope Spain crush them.
Yeah.
And I hope we get word that Romania lose at Belgium or against Belgium and therefore Spain qualify for the Rugby World Cup whilst we're out there.
Party time.
Party time.
Even bigger party time.
It's a disaster, really, for us, because we've got a live show to do afterwards. It'd be great if you had the live show out of the way, and then it'd be party time.
Yeah, but the stupid Spanish licensing.
Would there be... there would be a pitch invasion if they qualify for the World Cup, wouldn't there?
Well, we've got 250 people. We can do what we want. We want to invade that pitch. We'll invade it.
Unlike in Romania, that we were a significant chunk of the crowd.
We won't be here.
We will not be here, will we?
No.
Which is fantastic.
We were certainly a significant chunk of the VIP tent in Romania.
which we drunk dry.
Which we actually drunk dry.
I can't wait to have my next room temperature jelly deal.
Oh, those sour jelly deals. Oh,
there we go.
Nothing I'd ever tasted.
Right. Hit subscribe. You know the rest. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.